The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I had a couple of thoughts around suitability this morning that I wanted to share with you. And one was while I was driving here, I started out with the radio on to check the traffic. And at some point, I decided, after the traffic report, I decided to turn the radio off. And I do this often, actually. It's been one of my practices while driving to not have the radio on, almost as a kind of renunciation. But today I thought of it in terms of suitability. I didn't particularly have a need to listen to the radio this morning. And the exploration of turning off the radio, I found myself entering into a more peaceful state. Actually, in the moment of turning off the radio, there was a... You know, I was listening to KCBS, so it was the traffic. You know, they have a high energy, you know. NPR is a little lower energy. It's a little easier to be with, but I was listening to the KCBS, which has that high energy delivery, and it agitates the mind and body to hear that. And so when I turned the radio off, there was this whew, and I could be with that, feel that, and be in a more state of ease and peacefulness. And it occurred to me that this was more suitable, particularly for this week, for me, to not have that agitated energy entering into my mind before coming here. So I'd like to suggest, I mean, it is possible, I mean, as I was talking about a couple days ago and last night, whatever we're doing, we can bring mindfulness to it. So we could bring mindfulness to listening to the radio. We could bring mindfulness to how the content impacts us. We could bring mindfulness to the agitation or ease in the body as we're listening. And we can also, in a situation like this, where I did not have the need to listen to the radio. It wasn't part of my job. It wasn't anything I needed to do. I could turn that radio off and explore the suitability of listening to the radio. And in this case, I found it to be more suitable to not listen to the radio. So I'd actually encourage you to play with this while you're driving. Try turning the radio off and see what happens to you. I also, yesterday, as an example of what it might mean to be mindful while listening to the radio, while I was driving home, I saw the Amber Alert on the road, you know, the sign that said, you know, the car and the license plate number. And I turned on the radio to see if I could get a little bit more information, and I heard the story about the woman who had been loading her groceries and loading things into the car and had put her baby in the car and gone back to the home for another load, and somebody drove off with the car, with her baby in the car. And immediately in hearing that, I listened to that, my heart just, it went open. There was just this feeling of compassion for the mother, for the child. Later, I actually connected to compassion for the person who drove off in the car. And so there was a way in which that content came in. And there wasn't resistance, there wasn't just thinking about it, there was the feeling of how the heart was responding to that. So this is a way of exploring content in a mindful way. I talked on Sunday about the reflection. We reflected on our purpose on Sunday, and that's a way of kind of bringing in content and seeing how it impacts you. This can happen while reading, while listening to the radio, while hearing other people talk. It's kind of this, my teacher Sayadaw Utejaniya talks about it as a 50-50 mindfulness. You know, 50% of the attention on the content of what's happening and 50% of the attention on your experience, on the impact of that content. So that it's not that we're separating content from our mindfulness. That's the place, that's one of the big places in our mindfulness practice that we get. You know, we think that being mindful means letting go of content. That's our training in sitting. And so this is a big area of exploration in daily life. How does content impact you? While listening to the radio, while reading, while listening to coworkers speak, while thinking. How does the content of your thoughts impact you? So that was one piece to offer this morning. Another one, you know, in terms of suitability here, in this room, we're doing a daily life practice exploration here. And one of the big areas, again, of, you know, so I was just talking about a big area of content and how content impacts us and our unfamiliarity with content. Another big area of unfamiliarity in mindfulness is seeing. So I'd really like to encourage you in this room to keep your eyes open while we're practicing here. It's a practice. It's not easy to be mindful while seeing, but this is a good place to do that. So really want to encourage that. Let's see. Again, you can look at it, how does the seeing impact me? You know, things we see impact us. Things we hear impact us. So we can look at our seeing through that lens. And this will serve you as you go out into the world. While we're driving, we have to have our eyes open. While we're going to the grocery store, we have to have our eyes open. Then another piece, this is more practical. The last two pieces I'm going to say are kind of more practical pieces. One is that I may from time to time do a guided meditation during the sitting, just to let you know that. I think I'm going to do one tomorrow. I have an idea of one that I'd like to do tomorrow. So just to let you know that. It probably won't start right at the beginning, but I'd like to encourage you to arrive on time for that. And then the other piece, something that Victor suggested yesterday, was that generally my default here in this room is to not record the exchanges when we have discussions, when I ask for your descriptions of your experience. And then the way it kind of works will be, you know, you may say something, and then I may ask you some clarifying questions. So there may be a little bit of a back and forth exchange, and then I may offer some, I may or may not, it may just be the clarification offers the clarification in your own mind as well, but sometimes I might also offer some suggestions or some feedback, and often it's something that I feel will support the whole room. And the default will be to not record. If you don't mind being recorded, I will not ask you. I won't bring it up. But if you consciously know before you start to speak that you don't mind being recorded, let us know. And Victor will press the button and the exchange will be recorded. But the default is no, and you do not have to say no. But you have to say yes. You have to say yes if you want to be recorded. Okay, so off now.
So typically when I've had this intention, it's pretty much the same intention for years. I've named it slightly differently things. So my intention is to be open, allowing, and kind. And I really recognized that initially when I had that intention, it was very much around how I engage with others in the world. And so it was, I experienced it and noticed it much more in that way. And that I was reflecting on how much actually with this practice, right, that it's not just about that, you know, which I know, but I really felt it in a different way, that how I engage with everything. And so I've had the thought about, you know, or the lot, the constant presence of how I respond to my thoughts. But today it was how I engage with an activity related to, you know, all the reflections on people's practices. And so I can feel a resistance, you know, at times to not wanting to do something. And sort of so wanting to work with just allowing things to be the way they are without having to feel that resistance.
So another layer of allowing is to also allow the resistance. So there is that, yes, allowing things to be as they are without resistance.
Yeah, it's a not also, pushing away
yes,
of anything.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It's an inclusion process.
Yeah, exactly. So sometimes we find the simple recognition of something like resistance can be enough to allow that resistance to kind of soften and fall away. And then you're just with whatever it is that you were resisting. May not be pleasant, but there it is. And it's like there can be a little space like that. There's just a little settling back, and there can be a little space.
I think that what happens for me is that once I recognize I'm resisting something, and so the invitation is to allow, there's a certain way in which then the one thing I am working with is my new relationship to what's happening. So
say more. What do you mean?
So with a new perspective or a new awareness, it doesn't feel so much like a denial or a pushing away of the resistance, but not continued engagement with it, with this mindset of not wanting to do it.
Uh-huh.
So that part feels more active.
So are you actively bringing in a new perspective?
Well, because I have awareness of the resistance, and I have the intention and the true desire to want to, and to understanding that it creates suffering for myself. I mean, it comes from this place of like,
Yeah, so what you're talking about there, it sounds like, is you know what the Buddha suggested that we, from time to time, we may find it helpful to reflect on the drawbacks of a particular inclination of mind. And so that sounds like you're bringing in that, the recognition, this is suffering, this leads to suffering. So that's the shift of perspective there. There's some other shifts of perspective, just to expand the possibility for the room, that can be also helpful. So that there's the shift of perspective around looking at the drawbacks. Then there's other shifts of perspective we can bring in consciously. You know, that's a reflection that you're talking about, bringing in thoughts. And just to put this into the context of what I was just speaking about, how thoughts impact us, how content impacts us. When we bring skillful content into the mind, it also impacts us. So the consciously bringing skillful thoughts into the mind can produce more space, can bring in more ease. So that's essentially what's happening there, bringing in that content of the drawbacks. You can also bring in content, bring in wisdom, other kinds of wisdom, such as you might bring in the reflection, something like, this is impermanent. Your reflection was essentially around dukkha. So, you know, the unreliability, the drawbacks of that. Could also reflect on, the Buddha actually recommended this reflection, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am. And that one, That language can be helpful. Sometimes that language can feel a little foreign. So sometimes I use the phrase, for me, the phrase, "This is nature," which to me brings in the notion of the fact that this unfolding here is just a product of cause and effect. It's just like that tree I was talking about, that tree that's growing. It's just a process that's happening, a lawful unfolding that tree grows. What's happening right now, whether it's resistance or anger or self-recrimination or anxiety, is a process unfolding. It is a natural result of everything that's happened to us in the past, the conditions that we're in right now. It's a natural result. And for me, reminding myself, of course, it's kind of like, of course this is happening right now. This is the tree that's blooming right now. This is the tree that's growing right now. The conditions have put this into effect. And so for me, saying this is nature, is that kind of a reminder. So those are a few extra additional reflections you can bring in. And it's conscious, you know, consciously dropping that wisdom thought into your mind and then see what happens. You don't have to try to change your relationship to what's happening. Just see if bringing in some truth, some wisdom, impacts what your relationship is with that experience. Do you have anything more?
Thank you.
Okay.
What I wanted to say is, yesterday, trying to do my practice, the meditative part, the chore, I came up with excuses, and I noted in my mind that, you know, this is kind of a habitual thing, and the advice you just gave is really helpful. This is nature, because my excuse is something really common. I'm not going to assume anyone else has it, but I would think that I kept saying, this is not the perfect day to be doing this. It, you know, it's always in the future. It's going to be better, easier. How original. But I found, and I never really thought about this, causes me great suffering because I had a knot in my stomach, burning in my chest, disappointment in myself. So when will I do it? And it was really eye-opening, and I didn't have the opportunity yet today, so it is a new day, and I'm going to use This is Nature, because it's a go-to.
You mean this when is it going to be time for this is a go-to? Or
it's a This is Nature, that this is a natural part of being human. Instead of getting mad at myself or disappointed or frustrated or sad.
Yes, yes.
And I can also use that in the cue that I chose, because I'm thinking about it, but not when I'm doing it. You know, but then there's a gap in time between when I'm thinking about, please be mindful of what I'm turning a light switch on.
Uh-huh.
But another realization was that I picked getting up and down, and for some reason I hardly sat yesterday, so there weren't very many opportunities. So I'm glad I have two.
Okay, so you're doing the light switch or the switch too.
Yes. Yeah.
So in that first thing that you described, the when you're doing the chore, the excuses or the this isn't the perfect day, was that because there was the kind of contraction in the feelings of the tension, or was that a response to feeling like it wasn't the perfect day?
It was a response after giving a little bit of thought.
It was more of a response after giving thought to, I missed it. I've been washing dishes. But I had to make an entree, and I had to make a dessert. Wow. And so I thought, well, it's going to slow me down, because I noticed in the morning when I actually did think about the dishes, it slows me down.
Okay, so this is a great topic to talk about. I'm so glad you brought that up. While you're doing dishes, so this is, again, this is suitability. Our idea is, and our habit, I think, is when we become mindful of something, that it slows us down in a way that, so it's doing dishes that you're doing, right? So we kind of, we can get into it a little bit, you know? It's like, oh, you know, the warmth of the water, and we kind of move into, we can move into the activity itself and be mindful of that. And, you know, if there's other things happening in our lives that we need to be dealing with, like you'd said, there's other things going on. And so your thought is, well, it's not the ideal time to be mindful. The exploration in daily life practice is about opening to becoming aware of the context in which we are functioning right now. And so while you're washing the dishes, there's perhaps a needing to speed up because there's other things you need to do. Just notice that. Notice that while you're doing the dishes, you can also kind of be aware of, oh, thought, oh, you know, this is, I have to do that, I have to. So planning, there's thinking happening, planning. So rather than having, this is a big shift for us, that rather than having some idea about what it means to be mindful while we're doing an activity, often we think it means being mindful of the physical movement in the activity. Can you also be aware, or can you not have to have it be a directing of the attention to some specific part of the activity? Like, you know, so we're washing dishes and we think, okay, being mindful means putting my attention in my hands and noticing the movement or whatever, you know, we think it is, as opposed to being mindful means noticing whatever's arising right now, just being aware of the craziness of the mind, the agitation, the busyness, the planning, whatever is obvious. Can you just notice that?
So somewhat, are you saying that somewhat use the dishwashing as my breath when I'm sitting on a cushion? It's more of my anchor or
yes.
Place to go to pull myself back in.
You could use it that way. The activity is an exploration. The activity is kind of a cue, another form of a cue to help you try to explore more of this continuity of mindfulness. What we're mindful of in that time is just what's happening. So the cue is that we're doing this thing. And sometimes we may find that the content of the activity, like the dishwashing itself, impacts us. Other times there's so many other things going on that the content of the activity is really secondary. But it's helped us to remember, okay, pay attention right now. So you can use it as a cue and come back to that as you notice your mind kind of moving out. That can be one very skillful way of working with that. It's like an anchor for that 5 minutes or whatever it is. Yeah, okay. Ooh, the mind is out into, oh, planning. Okay. Thinking, anxiety, whatever. Another way to engage with it, and I think maybe sometime tomorrow I'll do this exploration around, what do we call it? Mindfulness out loud. Where we just do a stream of consciousness recognizing of what's happening right now, what's happening right now, what's happening, anchorless. You know, just this moment, this moment, this moment, this moment. That kind of practice can really help in the continuity of the chore. But for now, I'd encourage using it as an anchor, as you thought of. Yeah. So that's a really huge piece. This notion of having an idea of what we have to pay attention to, which is a kind of a directing of the attention, a choosing where we put our attention, and a more receptive kind of attention, where we kind of settle back. The attention will pick up on something, this is nature. The attention picks up on something. We're walking down the street and a bird flies across our path and boom, our attention goes to that. It's like we don't even have to think, oh, I want to look at the bird. Whew, the attention does it. So the attention naturally receives experience. And we can move into a kind of a space where the mindfulness is just kind of following along with what's already happening. And in daily life practice, this is a great skill to learn. Because if we are directing our attention, it's kind of like picking up that backpack of mindfulness again. This is what I need to do with my mindfulness. When we learn this skill of kind of following the awareness, this is what the attention is kind of naturally drawn to. The mindfulness begins to feel like it doesn't interfere with what's happening. So that's an exploration to look at over the week. Sometimes we are directing our attention. Sometimes we're recognizing this is what I want to pay attention to. Other times we can see that the mind is just kind of going to something, moving to something. You can see this in your sitting practice. A great place to explore this, actually, is if you use an anchor for your attention. And you could do this in the dishwashing, too. If you're using an anchor for your attention, you're paying attention to the breath. And typically, the way the mind wanders is that the attention goes to something else, and we're so busy thinking we're paying attention to the breath that we don't notice that the attention has picked up on something else. So we're sitting there paying attention to the breath, and there's a loud sound outside. Oh, but we've got this agenda, breath, breath, breath. We don't really consciously see that the attention has moved to the sound. Without consciously seeing that, we start thinking about the sound. Maybe it's a motorcycle. We start thinking about motorcycles. We start thinking about being on a motorcycle. We start thinking about being on a motorcycle on 101, I mean on Route 1 at the coast. And whew, there we are. We're at Big Sur. So that's one of the typical ways the mind wanders, is that we don't see that the attention has gravitated to another experience. So if we can begin to see that process happening, that's rather than reacting when the mind kind of goes off to something else, kind of get curious. Oh, there's the mind going to something else. Look at that. And you can, at that point, choose to direct it back to the breath, or you can simply allow, oh, the attention went there. How does that impact me? So that's a kind of a beginning way to start exploring that following of the awareness. Just beginning to see where the mind leaves its anchor. How does it do that? Did you have anything more, Myla? Okay. Turn it on. So one thing you mentioned was this notion of the... You used the word metadata, which it's a kind of a computer term that... There's the data, there's what's going on, there's the actual data that's going on. And then metadata is, I'll just wait. Oh, it's actually my phone. I'll just let it sit there. It's going to stop in about one more ring. My phone hardly ever rings. I forget it's in there. Sorry about that. The metadata is the description of the data. It's kind of the relationships of the data to other things. You know, what's this data about? What kind of data is it? And in this case, essentially, what I think about is there's what's happening. You know, there's an interaction with somebody. There's the content of that interaction, and then there's how we're relating to that. There's our response to that. There's perhaps frustration that arises. So that's a relationship. When we notice that relationship, it can be it's very helpful for us to notice that relationship. Because if we're not noticing that relationship, it's like that relationship is informing how we're responding. So we're having this conversation, we're frustrated. We kind of know we're frustrated, but we're not clearly aware. We're not fully aware. We're not clearly comprehending. Frustration is arising in this moment. We are instead acting out of that frustration. So that frustration is kind of the filter through which we are seeing the experience, and it's informing how we're responding to the experience. So very helpful to recognize that filter. When we can recognize that filter, sometimes it falls away, sometimes. More often it's, well, sometimes, and sometimes it can be, and I think that's what Tanya was saying earlier, like when she recognized the resistance, sometimes the resistance would fall away, and it was just being with what happened. That's noticing this metadata, noticing this relationship. Okay, there's what's happening, and there's resistance. There's what's happening, and there's frustration. As we open to that, as we recognize that, okay, there's what's happening and my relationship to it, that relationship becomes part of the field of what we're noticing. And sometimes it's like we're seeing through colored glasses. You know, we're seeing the world through blue glasses or red glasses, and the noticing of the filter may make the glasses disappear, but it might also be like we're taking off those colored glasses and then looking at them instead of through them. So rather than having our activities motivated by that state of mind, we can just know, okay, yeah, there's frustration happening. And it can help to moderate our response, you know, that we don't have to act out of that mind state. We can just be aware, okay, yeah, frustration's happening. Maybe want to take care with what I say, how I act. The next piece that might happen, or the kind of maybe even more common way that this might happen, is that we see the filter and we don't know how to take off the glasses or the awareness of the frustration doesn't, it's like we can't stop ourselves from acting out of it. And when that happens, we kind of just have to be compassionate for ourselves and just recognize, again, this is nature. This is the way it is. If you're seeing through that filter, you know, if you can't take it off and look at it instead of through it, often if you're in that space of, I can't take this frustration, you know, I don't even know how to think about letting go of this frustration or how to shift my attention so that it can take it in, you might check in and see, and what's my relationship to frustration? There could be yet another, a meta response. M-E-T-A it is. It's not spelled M-E-T-T-A. There could be yet a backed up, another response. Maybe we have a history with frustration in our family, and it's kind of tapping into that sense of, I'm never paid attention to. Nobody ever listens to what I have to say. And there's that happens. And so that recognition of, oh, that feeling of being dismissed. Okay, feeling of being dismissed is happening right now. That may allow us to be more with that feeling than with the frustration. So, you know, there's again, different skillful means, but this question of what's my relationship to what's happening, we can actually ask ourselves that question. In daily life, that can be a skillful means that, okay, there's what's happening, and how am I relating to that? What's my relationship to that? Not trying to find the answer. When we ask questions like that, drop that kind of question into our practice, whether we're at the kitchen sink washing dishes or writing an email, what's my relationship to this? Just ask that question and then let go of trying to find anything in particular. Just see what else comes up. Just keep noticing what's going on. Off, I think. Turn it on.
Oh, you could have turned that on. I forgot.
That's okay.
That was another word.
You were talking about a void that happens, that you just completely miss things. And there's not much we can do there. But in the moment that we wake up, in the moment that we recognize mindfulness has returned, In that moment of mindfulness returning, it's helpful to take in the experience of mindfulness returning in that moment. You know, what is it like to be mindful now? It's kind of, you know, rather than having a sense of judging ourselves for the fact that we weren't mindful, you know, what is it like to be mindful now? And this moment actually happens whenever you remember your tasks. Your anchors. Whenever you remember your anchors, there's a moment. Whether or not you're paying attention to your anchor, you know, whether you're remembering it around your anchor or not, you know, you're driving down the freeway and, oh, my anchor, I forgot to notice going through doorways. I got in the car, I didn't notice that. That moment of remembering about the anchor is this moment of waking up. In that moment of waking up, in that moment of remembering, oh, here I am driving down the freeway and I didn't remember whether I put my computer in my car. You know, there I am, waking up. See if you can take in what is it like actually to be mindful in that moment. What is the difference? One of the ways to explore it is to recognize there's a difference in the mind when it's aware, present, alert, and when it's absorbed in its void. In that recognition, in the moment of that coming back. I mean, we can't actually be in the void, but we can kind of get a sense of what that void feeling was like because there's a lingering memory of it in that moment when our mindfulness comes back. So getting a sense of the kind of distinction in that moment, what's the difference between being aware now and what it was like to be lost a few moments ago? As we get familiar with that distinction, first of all, it really supports the mindfulness itself. I mean, it supports our ability to recognize that mindfulness returning. It actually happens to us a lot. That mindfulness returning happens to us a lot. And we don't notice it so much because we typically get involved with what we've noticed. 100% of our attention, it's not the 50-50, you know, 100% of our attention goes into the content, and we are not aware. So that's often what we do. In a moment we become aware, we leap into the content and don't actually notice that mindfulness has come back. So the more familiar we get with that experience of mindfulness coming back, the more it begins to become familiar as an experience, and it begins to kind of point itself out to us. Those little moments, those flashes of mindfulness returning, are highlighted because we're familiar with the feeling of mindfulness. So that's one place to explore around the anchor. When you notice that your mindfulness has returned, just, okay, here, I'm aware now. What is that like? What was it? Just the kind of sense of that distinction between being lost and being here now. The other thing that can happen, that can start to happen, is that we get a flavor, albeit in retrospect, of that state of mind of being lost. We get a little bit of a sense of that. Maybe it feels like kind of checked out. Maybe it feels like racing in your mind. You know, the mind is really busy thinking about things, planning things, doing things. There's lots of different ways that our mind goes into that void. So we get a sense of the different flavors of the void a little bit. And as we get, even in retrospect, a little taste of that, we can begin to, you know, actually almost what happens in that moment of waking up is that often we're waking up into whatever that state is that is the void. So we're waking up into spaced out, and then there's that feeling of spaced out, or we're waking up into the busy mind, and there's that recognition of the busy mind. As we begin to get kind of familiar with that, we begin to understand how to be mindful of that state. The state itself is not something that's impossible to be mindful of. It's more that we're not familiar with being mindful of it. So an example from my own practice. I began recognizing, particularly when I was tired, and while I was eating often, that I would wake up, I would sit down, it's like, okay, mindfulness of breakfast, and I'd wake up kind of eating, but kind of spaced out, in this kind of haze of zzz, And I would see that my eyes were unfocused, and, I could see that the eyes weren't landing on it. I was kind of like, nothing, not focused on anything. And so waking up into that, there was a recognition of that kind of spaced out state as the mind came back into awareness. So there was the awareness of that. And initially what I did was I kind of chose to direct my attention. Okay, I'm aware. Breakfast is what's happening. Let me pay attention to breakfast. And I began becoming mindful while eating. And then it would happen again. And I'd wake up noticing that kind of spacey state. This happened enough that I got familiar with that spacey state enough that I began to be able to watch the mind go there. I was eating breakfast, and then I'd see the mind. It felt kind of like the mind went up here somewhere, kind of checked itself out of my body and hung out in space somewhere. So I began noticing that. I began feeling that experience of that checked out. I could be completely and fully aware of checked out, of that space of what I had been calling checked out. Mindfulness could be completely aware of that. And when I actually allowed it, when I recognized, oh, okay, I can be aware of this. I'd be eating and I'd notice, and I'd hang out there. It was a very pleasant state of mind. It was a very restful state of mind. And at some point in hanging out with it, it was like it was in a fog, right? It's like there was a fog there. And I was just aware of the foggy mind. And at some point it was like the sun came out and the fog lifted and that checked out state of mind vanished. And I recognized in that experience that the mind was actually taking a rest. That it actually was quite, I was quite tired. And it's like it needed a rest. And that kind of going into that state gave it some of the rest that it was kind of asking for in a way. So this exploration of noticing that distinction can begin to point out some of the qualities of the space that we get lost in. And then we may be able to slowly infiltrate that space with mindfulness. So it's starting to see if you can begin to get familiar with that. The other thing I'm hearing, I'm not sure if this is true, but in your example, when you were closing things down, in a way, I was hearing additional ways you could use your putting things down. Every application you closed was kind of like putting things down, right? And you were aware of that whole process. So there was, it wasn't the putting things down itself necessarily that was the thing that you space out around. It sounded to me like when you finished all of that, your mind leapt to, I don't know, what, being at IMC? Or, the next thing. And in that, it perhaps went into the future, or it seemed to me like you got into a mode of acting to do something, acting to get somewhere. And that kind of took precedence for you, the where you're going took precedence over the activities that you were doing, over the things you had to do to get there.
It was like that. It was as if I was doing a lot of actions. I remember locking the door and being aware of, I have to finesse the key, of locking the door, making sure the porch light was off and things like that. But there's a whole subset of the actions that were on automatic control.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
that were not monitored. And I had to inventory to see whether or not they were done because I wasn't...
You weren't consciously
aware. I wasn't consciously aware of them, but yes. I was completely active during the time that I was neglecting to pay attention to those things.
So explore this aspect a little bit. You know, while we're lost in something, as I said, there's not much we can do about it. But that moment when we wake up, there's a little bit of kind of infiltration into what's actually happening in the mind that kind of takes us out. So exploring that a little bit. Thank you. And we need to stop. So thank you all for your sharing. See you, some of you perhaps this evening and tomorrow morning.